Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody could join us. Hopefully you are in the chat room, and we will interact there too. If you've got questions for our guest tonight, who is JC Johnson, we're happy to have. We'll be talking about skinwalkers and other things, Bigfoots and stuff like that. So if you've got questions, you can ask them in the chat room, or you can call us. The numbers are on your screen. Mike Jones is subbing for John Rossi tonight on the screening calls, and John Rossi has a birthday today, so happy birthday to John Rossi. And before I forget it, I'm going to make this announcement at the end as well. John Rossi wanted me to let everybody know that this Saturday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, there's going to be a live investigation broadcast handled by Adventure Myths team at Jordan Springs. John's going to be up there apparently with him. We will post the link on Paranexus somewhere if you want to tune into that. Saturday night, this coming Saturday night, must be what, the 8th, 9th of October from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. So without any further ado, we're glad to have J.C. Johnson with us tonight. He's the president of the North American Fortean Society. He's a founding member of the crew over at Crypto Four Corners and has been a professional river and outdoor guide for over 20 years. His knowledge, attunement with nature, and undying faith make him an invaluable force in the field of research and investigations. His experiences with Sasquatch or Squatch, the Scragglies, we'll have to ask him about that. Skinwalker and many aspects of the realms of the paranormal and cryptozoological are nothing short of amazing accounts that, get this, will be sure to make your breath catch in your chest for a moment and leave you wondering whether you should check under your bed tonight. We are happy to have you, JC. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome, JC.
Do we have a JC with us? Apparently we have no JC with us. So I'm going
check,
to...
check.
There he is.
Here I am. Check. Can One, two.
Yeah. Can you hear us, JC?
I can hear you fine. I've got a little bit of feedback, but it's not as bad as some of the other shows.
Okay. Well, cool. Mike, try. Well, you're an old hand at this, so I don't know. Turn down your speakers a bit. Maybe that'll help. Sometimes this, the echo, as you know, comes and goes with Skype, so maybe it'll reduce. Anyway, good to have you. We're going to talk about skinwalkers. You know, I've seen a video or two, whatever you have, on skinwalkers a little bit, and you've had some experience with this concept. Can you tell us what a skinwalker is for the audience who may not know?
Well, basically what happens is you go in and you apprentice with a shaman, and you'll start by wearing the animal hides of the animal you want to emulate. From there, you will eventually begin to shift and change. And when you shift and change, you'll actually take on the characteristics of this animal. If you're going to be an elk, you're going to be a bear, you're going to be a coyote, you will become what this thing is, probably 90%. You'll shift into this creature.
Really? So, I mean, are there people doing this?
There's lots of people doing this, and that's why, you know, obviously I sent you guys the Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends to look at and just get an idea of what's going on out here. And
we haven't had a chance to view it yet, but we will in the next
few
days.
Believe Rebecca has it. She's got a copy, so
sure.
And I told her, go ahead, bootleg all the copies that you want. Get them out there to all concerned parties so they can look at this.
Yeah, you're referring to Sharon, yep.
So,
did tell us that.
So is the training or the apprenticeship with the shaman, is that something that's exclusive to just Native Americans, or are other folks getting involved in this, JC?
This is something that anyone can do.
Uh-huh.
Anyone can do this. And that's unfortunate. I mean, you know, it's a form of evil. This is all evil incarnate.
So what do the Native Americans use it for that purpose, or do they use it as a ceremonial purpose and it's just been somehow been perverted by all the folks getting involved in it, or is it something that the Native Americans do for various things?
We go back to the incarceration of the Navajos back around, I believe, in the 1860s. They go to Fort Sumner, and the ones they could catch, most of them hid out in the rocks and, you know, scratched out a living in the ground as best they could. But the ones who went to Fort Sumner, they saw the soldiers in their blue uniforms. They saw the soldiers wearing silver and gold jewelry, and that changed their culture. When they came back, they wanted the flour that they got while they were interned. They wanted the gold and the silver that they saw the soldiers wearing. And the blue garb that they had became traditional Navajo dress, this particular royal blue-looking thing. So that's what happens with them. And when they get back to their ancestral lands, they've been given them back, they're all changed. They're different. They're different people than before they went into being interned and being in prison, basically. When they get back, they've got the white man's ways. They start thinking about possessions and property and things like that. And the skinwalker used to be something that helped the Navajo people. The skinwalker used to go out and spy on the cavalry. The skinwalker used to go out and spy on, even during the days of the conquistadors out here, they would go out and spy and find out what was going on, when the attack was going to happen, what they were going to do, as best they could explain back to the Diné, the people. When they got home after their internment at Fort Sumner, they had all these evil things in their minds, property, possessions, gold, silver, royal blue, material to wear. These were a changed people, and they returned home. And the skinwalker was then used, the ones who still knew how to do it, they were used as something really evil. They sent them out to spy on their neighbors. They sent them out to curse their neighbors. They sent them out to make their neighbors sick, things like that, just really bad things.
Now, are skinwalkers exclusive to just one tribe, or are they something that has kind of like expanded to different type of tribes? Because I think the Utes did it too, didn't they?
I think almost every tribe has some form of shapeshifter that they will, you know, talk about to some point. You've got the Wendigo, which is actually a part fire and ice creature.
Right.
You've got these different creatures that are out there. Almost every tribe has something to talk about when it comes to the shapeshifter, the skinwalker.
Well, here's a couple of questions from the chat room. First, on your video, how does one get a copy of your video?
I think that probably the easiest thing to do is just Google Crypto Four Corners, and you'll come across an Untamed Dimensions website. And on the Untamed Dimensions website, which is Crypto Four Corners, we've got it there, you can link into the video and order it. And it'll cost you a whole $7.99.
Well, that's pretty steep. I better only buy 10.
This is a public service message. I mean, basically what I'm coming out with is some really truthful things about a really ugly, ugly situation out on the reservation. So, I mean, we're just trying to cover our costs by getting this product out to people.
So here's another question. This is from Sharon, and it keeps scrolling up on me. On the skinwalkers, by what mechanism do they use to transform into animals?
This is a really dark power, a very deep dark power that has a hold on a lot of people out here on the reservation. This is a very dark place, and there isn't a lot of salt and light out here. And the salt and light that is out here is working really hard. Trust me.
It seems like such a dichotomy for those folks because, you know, it seems like the Navajos create such beautiful artwork with gems and their fabrics and stuff. It just seems so so strange that those folks would, you know, be so preoccupied with that. But then I guess anybody who's ever come in contact with the white culture has suffered in one form or another.
Well, you know, it's the manifest destiny in Yidi. Indeed.
Gone awry.
I've been with the Navajo for over 20 years now, and some of my very best friends are Navajo, and some of our, most of my crew out here that works with me, helping me with our explorations and the things that we do, they're Native American. And I tell you what, they all agree on one thing, that no culture should condone cannibalism, homicide, child abuse, necrophilia in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Good to know that some things are universal.
Yeah, this is kind of a universal thing, at least with my crew. And we go to another point. And I really like Ron James from Sedona Media came out with a video not too long ago. And he interviewed me up at the Dulce conference. We had a conference up in Dulce about the underground base up there.
With
Norio Hayakawa.
Yeah, Norio.
He was on the show about a year ago.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy. A great friend of mine. What a great guy. But we happened to get together with David Hatcher Childress, who's an unconventional archaeologist, and he's going around the world saying, all these ancient peoples didn't have the technology to build these different things, the pyramids, the Incas, the Aztecs. They did not have the technology to put together these incredible works of what they put together. They didn't have the technology.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And we also had Chris O'Brien. Chris O'Brien does a lot of studies on the mesas near what's going on in Dulce. There's kind of a full circle that comes together with all these things. It's amazing. But back to, we were up there, and I did this particular segment with Ron James, Chris O'Brien, and David Hatcher Childress, and we talked about Bigfoot, and we talked about skinwalkers, and what's really cool is I'd run into Hoyt Velarde, and I hadn't seen him in probably 5 years. And Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization sent him out back in 2005 to help me track a fishing Bigfoot, as you will, on the San Juan River. And we got down into the area where this thing was habitating and continuing to show up at his favorite fishing spot. And when he got tired of us, he finally smashed a tree down and took off. And this tree, I mean, blew up like a keg of dynamite. It scared the hell out of me. My friend down there. And what I did know about Hoyt Velarde at the time is that he was chief of police of Dulce during the height of the cattle mutilations and UFO sightings back in the 1970s.
Okay.
So, you know, this is another very interesting fact and factoid to bring into all of this. So,
I guess I'm not following you. How does it relate? Can you try it once more? Sometimes my blonde hair is blonder than normal.
Well, we go up to Hoyt's ranch, and no one's been able to spend the night up at this particular cottage he has up there. They get run off by morning. His ranch, as far as the large hairy hominids, the furry ones, is haunted with these things.
Haunted and meaning there's a lot of these...
large hairy hominids up there.
Like Bigfoot, Sasquatch.
Yes, okay. Entirely. And
where's
anyway,
the ranch located at, JC?
It's up on the Jicarilla Apache Nation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's where Dulce is. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But the Dulce story gets deep and big, and we could probably do a whole show on that. And Tim Beckley's book he's got out, The Dulce Underground Alien Biolab at Dulce, the Benowitz Papers. I've got a chapter in there that I share with Norio Hayakawa. It's a good read. It's a good read. But as we're finding different things out after the fact, because he's had this colonel come on, oh, I'm getting too deep here. We should go back to skinwalkers.
Oh, we'll come back.
Yeah, don't stop now, JC. You're on a roll. Go ahead.
We're fascinated. This Colonel X came out, and I believe the author of UFO Highways, that's the name of the book, is coming out in December. He checked this guy out really good. He saw his old identification papers. He saw his old driver's license. He saw everything about this guy, what he was in the past, and now he knows what he is presently. He's a professor at a university in Northern California. What happens out of this is this guy is giving a full disclosure of what he knows about the base at Dulce. It's the Rio Arriba complex. He is confirming that there is actually a base there. Now, what he's not doing, he's not lending any privilege to the alien grays that have been spoken of. He is talking about a firefight with the inhabitants inside of this mountain, which is probably aliens, some type of alien or whatever. But
well,
a lot of
been,
the things...
That's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Supposedly you're talking about the battle that took place between the the military and the aliens over a dispute they had there. That was like, what, 76 or something like that?
Something of that nature. Yeah. You know, and he's not going into detail, and until I guess we buy the book or read the book, we're not going to get the whole story. But what's interesting, Hoyt Velarde would have been there as chief of police, most likely, when these bodies came out of this installation, alien and or human at the same time. So I find that interesting.
Who was the fellow that originally blew the whistle on them, the guard? I can never recall that fellow's name.
Well, Costello. Costello's his name.
Yes, Costello.
Now, he's saying Costello never existed. There was never anyone by the name of Costello employed at this complex. So this gets deeper and darker. Do we have a disinformation project out there that we've been listening
to?
You know? And what I said in the book is my gut feelings, what I felt, what I feel, what I know, and I'm trying to reconfirm that in my chapter in this book. And, you know, I am these are not our friends, these aliens, and they're not here to cure cancer, okay? And we need to be really careful. All of us. If you're looking for a higher power, don't be looking to these entities that claim to be these things from outer space. Trust me.
I like the channelers myself.
Do you think that, do you buy into the UFO folklore that we entered into a devil's agreement with these aliens for a trade-off of technology?
According to Colonel X, and that's the thing, you guys go check out Norio's page on my MySpace and or Facebook, mostly Facebook. He's given out a lot of information as much as he can because he knows a lot more than he can tell right now before this book comes out. But you need to go look at what he's talking about. And he's more along the lines of the feelings of John Keel. You know, in the end of John Keel's life, did they ask him, they said, are you a UFOologist? And he said, no, I'm a demonologist. So I really believe we're dealing with something earthbound when it comes to these aliens. That's my gut, my spirit.
Are you talking about earthbound spirit or earthbound entities or just...
Earthbound entities and spirits.
Okay.
We're their playthings right now, and I'm getting tired of it. I think you are too.
Yeah.
We're all
well,
getting
for those in the audience who aren't familiar with the Dulcie, and I find it hard to believe that any of our folks wouldn't be, but Dulcie's a really dark, dark place with a lot of really negative energy there as to, you know, the human experimentation and people kept against their will. And I think that one of the things that I found, you know, even if it was a fable, that was so interesting about Costello's version was that he claimed, or whoever the real Costello may, whoever he may have been, was that one of the guys that he came across in one of those sections down there claimed that he was abducted against his will. And he later claimed that he found that guy's name in a missing persons.
Yeah, you know, and we have to look at all this very carefully. And I think what I said in the book is if even 1% of what is being claimed is going on at Dulcie, 1%, I am very, very disturbed about this. If even 1% of this is true. Mm-hmm. Now, let me go a little further. A book came out. It was on the Farmington Daily Times on the front page last week. It's called Yellow Sand. In this book, Yellow Sand is describing the Navajos being involved in the uranium mining back in the 1940s. Now, here's what happens. In 1940, USGS set out, the Army Corps of Engineers, and all kinds of people from the government set out across the Navajo Reservation to find places where they could find uranium. Where they couldn't get on horseback or vehicle, they went in on foot. Archuleta Mesa used to have a big opening on one side that's been closed in now, probably by dynamite or some type of something to close it in. But what's being described by, I believe, this particular group was Army Corps of Engineers and regular Army, and they didn't have recording devices at the time. They would have been taking notes or something. And what they found was the skeletons of what they believed were Apaches. They found repeating rifles, probably Winchesters, and they found some Colt 45 firearms and so forth in the area, and about a dozen dead Apaches, I believe. Now, further back in the cave, and these are the guys taking notes, they found these aliens, the big gray-eyed, blah, 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 aliens, you know, the ETs type thing. And then further back in this cave, they found what they described as machinery. So in about 1870, the Jicarilla Apache had a shootout with these inhabitants, whatever they were, at the Mesa. And this is something the author of UFO Highways has been able to go back and verify through notes and disclosure. This is incredible stuff. This is neat.
The Apaches are real tight-lipped about what goes on out there in the Mesa, too, aren't they?
To a point. And, you know, the thing is, you know, you can talk to Norio, and, you know, he's got some good ins and connections up there, and I'm trying to reestablish some ins and connections up there for the large hairy friends of ours, or unfriends, whatever they are, these large hairy hominids. I'm trying to reestablish some things up there also. But they are tight-lipped, mostly the Navajo. They're very tight-lipped about what's going on out here. And the witnesses I've got to work with, like, you know, Chief Leonard Dan, and he's not really a chief. He got that name on the road because of his wisdom and his knowledge, and he could track a cricket through a snowstorm, okay? The guy's incredible. Uh-huh. And it's a privilege to know him and a privilege to work with him. And Java Bob is online with us right now in the chat room, you know, and he's worked with him, and he can reiterate my experience with him and my friendship with him, and he also has a friendship with Chief Dan. So,
well, we have a couple of questions on the Skinwalker theme. We can always come back, move around. One question is how can these people transform into animals? What are they using, their minds or spirit helpers?
I wonder about that. And there was something some time ago, and I'm not giving myself akin to any of this, but, oh, God, I won't even go there, actually.
Okay.
You can if you want, JC. You're amongst friends.
Okay. I was messing around with these things, and I had a particular clan out by Flagstaff, Arizona. They were out in Loop, Arizona, and they had geared me to be their medicine man, a white guy, to be their medicine man. And I started messing around with some things. And at one point, I remember one night I was drinking beer and playing cards with a bunch of – I'm a meat cutter by trade. So I had a bunch of meat cutters around this table and friends of mine. And all of a sudden, it just came over me to say, I'm a bear. So I said, I'm a bear. And everybody jumped up and stood away from the table. I never changed. I didn't turn into anything or anything like that. They saw a bear sitting at the table with a beer in his hand and cards in the other hand. And they saw a bear.
Were they smoking anything?
No, we were drinking beer.
Damn.
Now, this is what gets really weird. The gentleman's house that I was in, his wife came home, and she saw a bear, and she wasn't there for the power of suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
She saw a bear at the table.
So what's up with that?
That I don't know. I don't know. And I'll tell you this, I don't play with that anymore. I don't mess with that.
Hmm.
But the power of suggestion and whatever influence I had with me at the time, they saw this. They saw that.
Hmm. Okay, here's another question. Could Bigfoot be a shapeshifter as well?
I'm holding out. I really am. I'm holding on. And, you know, I talked about this on a show earlier this week because everybody's out there looking, setting up, you know, doing their thing to catch this creature on camera or whatever they're doing. Be very careful. Be very careful. Be very careful.
You know, what's really puzzling about the whole Bigfoot saga is that, you know, there's researchers, investigators out there, you know, there'll be this evidence. I mean, rocks will be thrown or sticks, and you know, they'll find the nests or the beds. They'll find tree limbs broken, right? All the telltale signs of Bigfoot activity. And yet, and people, you know, will be just driving somewhere and one will cross the road. I mean, you get these glimpses of this activity. And yet, despite all of our efforts, it's like we can't photograph one for the life of us, you know, to speak of. I mean, we can't get any further evidence. What's up with that? I mean, this puzzles me.
I'm in hopes that some of the photographs I have, when after we have disclosure, then I can appreciate these photographs. I hope for that. One of the photographs I have, the subject of the photograph is over 16 feet tall.
Wow.
Okay. So if it was 8 to 10 feet, I would have probably been enjoying this photo for many years. But this thing is towering over the pinyon, juniper-type vegetation around it. It's huge.
Is there a connection between Bigfoot and UFO activity?
This I don't know. I don't know.
It has been reported. But the interesting thing in the experiences of the cases I've read, have often, maybe not always, but often when Bigfoot is reported around UFO activity, it's like the people see these red eyes in the woods.
Yeah. Now, and the thing is, you know, if you light it up and you got, you know, eyes that are glowing because of the introduced light, then I'd give a lot more credibility to that. When you've got eyes that glow independently, mm-hmm. I have concerns about that.
Yeah, maybe concerns of whether it's real or not, right?
No, concerns of what it really is. What it really is.
Meaning, I mean, let's speculate for a moment.
I would think, and you brought me on this show to share my opinions and share my experiences. So I don't fall into a guideline or a rule or have permission from anyone to say what I say other than the Almighty. I'm telling you, if you have independently glowing eyes, you've probably got something demonic.
Mm.
And it's something you should be very careful of.
Well, we don't so much do demonic, but we will give you a malevolent, inhuman entity.
How do the Native Americans view the hominids in their area?
In your experience, JC? It's a hush-hush thing. They don't talk about it very rarely. Very rarely do I get them on camera. Those witnesses that have gone on camera, they've actually become investigators themselves. And they're out looking for these things. And not looking for them, we're looking at things. It's not necessarily we're going to find them. They find us. And we have whatever experience according to whatever happens, I guess.
All right. We have a caller on the line, Grindel. What's your first name?
Oh, wow.
John, welcome to the program.
John, thanks for calling in.
All right. JC,
gentlemen, this is John L. Johnson from Grindel Films.
Yes.
He's got a video out called Hunt the Dog Man. It's an excellent production.
Thank you, sir. I have a question concerning the Dulce area.
Oh, wow. I'm getting all kinds of feedback.
Oh, you are?
John, you don't have your radio on at the same time, do you?
No, I don't. I muted the speakers.
Well, give it a shot. We'll have to go with it. I'm not sure what would be causing the echo.
Okay, JC, if you can hear me, when I was researching, well, when I was up in the LBL in 07 with Bart Nunley doing this thing, we had a lot of rain that September in the evenings and kind of sequestered back in the Grand Rivers Inn. And I was online researching anything I could research about Dog Man and so forth. And what I came up with was a website that had claimed that this person had some knowledge or there had been some evidence that...
John, you've kind of faded out a little bit. I'm not sure why.
Okay. Is that better?
Not yet.
Okay.
Are you on Skype?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Wow.
I just called in straight.
Try speaking up real loud and maybe we can get your question.
Okay. Is this any better?
No. Is something weird happening?
Okay, hold on. You want me to call back in?
Yeah, let's try that.
All right. I'll drop off and call.
Thanks.
Terrific. Thanks. Appreciate it.
So we'll wait for John to call back in, and you're still with us too, JC, right?
I hope I am.
You are.
We're getting echoes and all kinds of things. It's not your fault. It's Blog Talk. I'd love to get you guys over to G-Streaming. G-Streaming. You will have your own program on G-Streaming
and
get away
from
Blog Talk.
It's just so much.
It will cost you absolutely nothing.
I'm sorry, that's too much. We've got John
back
on. I'll
get you on G-Streaming.
We'll talk about that after the show. John, you with us?
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm much better. Okay.
Yeah, you sound much better.
Go ahead and
try. Okay, great. Thank you. JC, when I was in the LBL doing the thing with Bart, I was on the laptop at nights doing research, and I came up with something concerning Dulce and about some sort of alleged research where they had successfully merged the DNA or merged the genes of humans with canines, and it just sent a chill down my spine. Now, I know that whole story, based on some things that I've learned now, is pretty much an urban legend, but it doesn't preclude the existence of these things and the other reports that Bart gets and the other reports that people get in Michigan. So have you heard anything about this?
You know, the thing is, we've got this really clean, sanitized thing with this Colonel X, as far as Norio is, and this author of UFO Highways. It looks really good. I like what I'm seeing. I like what I'm hearing. We've got a lot of government stuff going on up there also. I think the UFO Hunters interview where they got Abe Valdez, who used to be a state trooper and so forth, they found an embryo inside this cow that had some human attributes to it and was very disturbing. and it's a UFO Hunters episode you can tune into. You
right,
can find.
I recall seeing that episode. That
it's
was
the
shocking.
Yeah, and he's got pictures of it, and you know he was rolling back the eyelids on this creature they found inside this cow, and it had some human attributes. So there's some disgusting things going on up there. Irregardless, you know, we might blow off Mr. Costello as the security guard or whatever he thought he was or whoever he says he was. There's still some really disturbing things coming out of Dulce.
And, you know, the interesting thing about that, JC, is the fact
go
that
ahead, sir.
The interesting thing about what you just described is the fact that, you know, there's been some conjecture. I don't think it's conjecture. I think it's a fact that with bovine, that it's compatible to implant embryos into bovine, anatomy, reproductive anatomy, and that they will, you know, take root and grow. Which is really, you know, yeah. So there's been some speculation that you could use the uterus of a bovine or a cow as an artificial, you know, uterus for implantation purposes, which kind of fits in, dovetails that somewhat.
Well, we'll go back again to the height of the cattle mutilations and the UFO sightings. Abe says coyotes don't wear gas masks. Okay, so we've got these cattle mutilations, all these other things going on. A lot of these cattle were marked with fluorescent paint also to be tracked and followed. So we're going into something like that. That's something to look at.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not an alien thing. It's somebody else at work. Now, if we've sold our souls for the technology of the aliens, okay, that's something else to look at too. I can't go into it now privately. If you guys want to email me and stuff like that, I will get you some information, and I'll get you some information on the canyon that we've been working for some time now that I believe has an underground base underneath it. And I had some researchers out here recently. I won't mention their names, but they're very curious about this subject.
Did that answer your question, John?
Yeah, it does. I just want to mention, too, to JC, thanks for turning me on to SD. And
yes.
I'm going to be going back in a couple of weeks to work with him. And
I am so with you.
Pardon me?
I'm so with you in spirit. I'm so with you in spirit on this, John. I want to see you make this happen.
Well, I just want to get a little better evidence and see if I can't recoup a little dignity. I kind of bit on these other people, hook, line, and sinker, and then produced a gigantic thing. I appreciate everybody who's commented on that, but I don't feel comfortable with it at this point, so I need to go back up there and do some more stuff. Anyway, I'm going to get off here and give somebody else a chance. So take it easy. I'm going to be sending you an email on or a message on Facebook. Someone wants to get in touch with you. Okay.
God bless you, John. And Hunt
all
the
right.
Dog Man is still
thanks.
A good production.
Thanks for calling in, John.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, John.
All right. Bye.
So we have another question related to skinwalkers in relation to sweat lodge ceremonies. Any concern about skinwalkers in that environment, sleeping in a lodge afterward?
I have to be careful to a point, but not to a point. And I don't want to offend anyone, okay? We have to be really careful. And when you open your mind up to other things are going to step inside real quick. That happens.
So, be self-possessed?
Not necessarily, but there's things waiting. Believe me. Okay. A third of heaven came down here with the deceiver, and they've got things to do. They have a job to do. And they're here to deceive. They're here to kill, steal, and destroy.
Okay, so basically what we've discussed so far related to the skinwalkers is that from your experience and your information, they have become more of an evil thing rather than good, correct?
And honestly, back in the days, in the early days, they were probably a benefit to the Diné, the Navajo. They were a benefit. When they came back from learning our ways, that's probably when this thing got bastardized.
Okay, interesting. So another question that did come up that I hadn't asked yet was, what are the scragglies that you're referring to?
Well, you know, we're talking about the large hairy hominids. And I'll say this in passé because it's passé to me, but I'll say the word Bigfoot, okay? We don't have any commonalities other than what's on the mountain. You know, what's on the mountain is the huge linebacker with the six-pack abs and the huge shoulders, and they're incredible. These are incredible beasts. What I'm seeing down here on the river at lower elevations is something else, something different. Now, we do have some mixture. There's a big guy that's been down here for 2 years now, and I think he had an offspring with what I would call the scragglies, which is something different than the mountain.
So how do they differ? I'm assuming we're talking about hominids, right, hairy hominids?
We're talking about hairy hominids. The scraggly, the one we've got photographs of, the one we studied to a point, looks like Chewbacca.
Okay.
Okay. The ones up on the mountains look like King Kong.
Are those the really tall ones you were referring to, or?
The scragglies down here, Scar, we named him Scar, the fishing Bigfoot, he was probably 12 feet tall.
Oh.
That's big.
Mm-hmm. Very big.
But he's not the massive body structure of what we're seeing up on the mountains.
How tall are the ones on the mountains?
When I talk to a Navajo sheep herder, and he points to a telephone pole, and he says he was as tall as that pole, that's his height reference. So we probably got something up there even above 20 feet tall. This is hard things. These are hard things. These are hard things. You brought me on your show. I'm telling the truth to the best of my ability.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying.
That's just taking it in.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's you know, that sort of thing. I mean, that's completely out of the norm for. I mean, I've heard of accounts in the Canadian wilderness of loggers observing Bigfoot that they estimated were 12 feet tall, but that size is pretty remarkable. I mean, that just seems to be kind of. I'm not disputing it. It just seems to be, you know, a new variant that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. And another thing, too, is Joe Fex. If you guys ever get the opportunity to have Joe Fex on your show, he's investigated up at Pine Ridge Reservation, South Dakota, different places. He's talking about 24-footers.
How do you spell his last name?
F-E-X, Joe Fex. He's on the Apex. He's on Apex with
us. Look him up. Sure,
he's one of our family.
Well, let's talk about that video, and you'll have to kind of tell us about it, where it was taken. There was the PVC pipe in the field that had the two holes in it.
And I'll tell you what, I'm really excited about this. We've got some really good news about some of the DNA that we gathered. Awesome. Awesome.
Cool. So where did that occur at?
On the Navajo Reservation.
In Arizona? Is that where that's?
New Mexico.
New Mexico, okay.
Yeah.
And so there's this PVC pipe. Is that what it was, PVC?
Yeah, it was a Schedule 40 PVC pipe.
And it was what, about a foot in diameter or bigger?
8 inches.
8 inches, okay.
Yeah.
And there's these two holes in it about the width of shoulders or broad shoulders, right?
Yeah.
And just tell us the story. I mean, the video is fascinating. You had speculated that an animal had gone in there.
Well, at this point, we know what the animal is. So
what was it?
Well, wait. But I'm breaking this tonight.
Oh, okay.
I'm really excited. Okay.
Okay, wait
for it.
This
is part of a larger study of things. And it's very exciting to be a part of this.
Cool.
But I'm glad that it wasn't, a bear or a cougar or something of that nature. It's what we believe it to be.
Okay, so is that all you're prepared to say about that particular event?
The tenacity of this animal to get to this skunk is just amazing. I've got the pictures up on Facebook. You can go look at them. The scratch marks on the end of the pipe. You know, this thing knew irrigation. At one point, this thing knew it could take irrigation apart, maybe into shorter four-foot sections. So it tried to take this pipe apart, and it didn't come apart. Everything to do with this pipe shows intelligence.
Huh.
Where it punched through is, as you notice in the video, where the vents are, where it pulled the vents off to look inside to find the skunk, it punched through the vent areas.
Okay, so it punched
and that
through
shows
the vents.
Intelligence too.
Sure.
Yeah, that okay. Shows intelligence. It
Maybe
does.
I missed something on that video. I was under the impression that it just flat out punched through the PVC pipe.
No, and I had Jerry Bacon and Mark Curtis out here, and I had some more eyes to look at this pipe, and Mark Curtis said, "Look, you see where it pulled the vent things off? It punched through there." So the point of least resistance is where this creature punched through to get this skunk.
Well, that took some intelligence as well.
Yes.
Was it looking to eat the skunk?
No, actually, the first night it just took the skunk's sack, the actual scent sack, that you and I would not touch with a 100-foot pole.
Oh, all you got to do is smell one once.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what disappeared the first night. And then it came back probably several times and harvested different things from this skunk. It never really ate anything. At one point, we found where it swallowed like a front leg, and it coughed it up, spit it out, threw it up.
Huh.
And that's DNA that I did not gather. I left it.
I can't say that. I blame you.
Okay.
Were you busting out all your cans of tomato juice?
Well, you know, there wasn't a lot of odor there. You know, the skunk scent, the gland was gone. It had been taken. So there wasn't a lot of smell there, actually. Probably, you know, a little bit of residual smell on the vegetation and so forth, but nothing real strong.
So can you speculate on what it was doing? Do you think it was a ceremonial thing?
No, my gut is, with all the babies we've had down this year, and if you look into our videos, you'll see one of the videos is called The Baby.
Mm-hmm.
We've probably got, honestly, 20 different sized youngsters that have been reported down there this year. Hmm. 20. Different sized youngsters. And if I was going to hide my babies, and a lot of times you will find a cougar will kill a skunk, bring it out in front of its den, and leave it there and cover the scent. Okay.
Well,
this is something, this is something different. This, whatever attacked the skunk, took the scent gland and removed it and took it away. It didn't take the baby, the skunk.
Can you estimate, it sounds like people have kind of theorized that these hominids, although they're very elusive, may live in small little clans, and the population may be kind of diverse. In your research, what do you think, or what would you estimate the population is, of all these critters?
Okay. I've been out here in New Mexico since 2002. I've seen one bear, or what I thought was a bear. And the state of New Mexico says they have 5,000 bears. I've seen one.
Hmm.
I've seen 10 hairy hominids over the years.
Huh.
10.
What's been your closest encounter with one of these hairy hominids?
Down on the San Juan River, I was actually, we had some customers down, or, you know, people that were trusting me with their lives. So I was trying to run some things out of this area. And I laid down some ground fire on the ground, and this thing came up behind me, and I felt its breath and body heat on my back.
Wow.
And by the time I turned around with my pistol and the flashlight, it was busting brush out of my sight. That
wow.
fast.
That's fast.
Yeah.
So you've obviously had a lot of close encounters with these.
You know, in this particular situation, you find it hard to understand. I didn't want that encounter. I didn't want that intrusion. I had a particular plan thing in mind for what we were there to do, and that was a river trip and people down on a river trip with us. Understand that. And, you know, like, oh, man, they had Sasquatch right there. Why didn't they get his autograph? And, you know, I mean, Elvis, thank you very much. You know, no. I didn't want that. I didn't want that.
You know, the thing that I find interesting, JC, is the fact that you got a creature that's that big, that's obviously that powerful and formidable in terms of, you know, humans are pretty frail in comparison. And what I really find fascinating is, why don't they ever attack us?
I think they're being held back, and there's a lot of things being held back. And everybody's talking about this great awakening right now. You know, everybody's talking about this great thing that's going on. Everybody's waking up. They're looking at the facts for once. Joe Sixpack is even like coming out from his stupor. The great awakening is probably the Holy Spirit.
So, all right. So, I had a question and it's just escaped me. All right, so we've interesting. I guess here's the question: was have you ever? I mean, you've obviously done intentional Bigfoot expeditions. Am I correct?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And and have you encountered them on those intentional investigations?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we have.
Interesting.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Just yes, a quick question in regards to the previous statement before Doug lost track. Do you see this great awakening as fitting in with Christian eschatology?
Yes, I do. Actually,
okay.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So this would be part of the unfolding of biblical prophecy in some shape or form?
Sir, you have got it on the head.
Okay.
You have got it.
Okay.
So there's a lot of sightings around the country, and obviously a lot where you're at. I mean, you've had an awful lot of sightings. I mean, you've had more sightings than any other Bigfoot investigator I've ever talked to.
And, you know, the insane posse that goes on with this will be, I'll be vindicated for all of this. All these things I've been saying for all these years, I will be vindicated. Thank you. And I thank God for that. I do.
Well, cool. So what's in the future, JC? I mean, where are you going from here? You know, what's your future plans?
I've got three things. I've got exposure, disclosure, and closure. Three things.
That's good.
I would like to go fishing again, guys. Damn.
Yeah.
Somebody come take me fishing where these furry ones aren't. You know, I mean, take me somewhere.
Well,
take
you know, at least
where they're not there.
At least they don't have a pole. They're doing it with their hands and stuff, so that makes it kind of tough.
It's amazing. And we go back to Scar. Scar would stand still, and Chief Leonard Dan says, you know, as bad as they smell, that is the best catfish bait in the world. And Chief Dan's explaining it to me while I'm watching it, because I'm trying to figure this out. And he's like, look at that. Watch, watch. He says, they're coming up. They're nibbling on his fur. And when they would come up and nibble on his fur, he'd swat them out of the water off onto the bank. And he had two little ones over there grabbing.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So interesting stuff. So you've been doing this how long?
Well, we started running into these things back on the Mogollon Rim in Arizona. And Alex Hearn from Arizona Cryptozoological Society, awesome guest. If you ever want to have him on, he's incredible. Java Bob Schmalzbach. Java Bob, love him. If you ever want him on, incredible guest. I've got an incredible guest for you guys, if you ever want him. Honest, great people.
Cool. So,
but back around 1997, we ran into these things on the Mogollon Rim. Horrific encounters.
Oh, bet.
Subjects of other shows, my goodness. But yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Well, cool. So we've talked about a lot of stuff tonight. We've talked about, obviously, skinwalkers, Bigfoot.
Dulce.
Dulce. And your website. Which website do you want to put out for people to go check out?
Just type in Crypto Four Corners on Google. And when you get the Untamed Dimensions website, you'll find our Crypto Four Corners website. And I'm not going to change that. I'm leaving it just like it is. We've had a wonderful sponsor for years now who's kept our website up.
What wonderful. About your Fortean Society?
North American Fortean Society. We've got states open that you guys can be a chapter.
Cool. What's your crypto site? You want to just rattle it off and I'll type it in?
Type in North American Fortean Society.
Got that one already. I thought I'd put it in the chat.
And type in just Crypto Four Corners. Google it. You'll find
com.
It. No, not a .com. It's a different leash.
Okay, so do a search for Crypto Four Corners and you'll come across.
Yeah,
it'll come right up.
And Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends for $7.99, you'll get to see it. So.
Sounds good. Well, we're coming down to our last couple of minutes. JC, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure for you guys. Really? Now, tell you what, I need to get you on G-Streaming. I'm going to get you off Blog Talk.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Deliver you. I'm delivering you from Blog Talk.
All right.
All right, so...
love your show. You guys are awesome.
Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Yeah, you're very kind.
We hope you made you comfortable.
You hang on with us for a minute. We'll get that information. Next week on Paranexus Universe, we are having Dr. John Climo, Channeling ETs in the Afterlife. Should be an interesting show. And don't forget this Sunday, Informal Paranormal at 10 p.m. Eastern on the same channel here. And John Rossi wanted me to let her know that Saturday night, we'll post the link on Paranexus from Saturday night, this coming Saturday night from 9 to 11 p.m. There will be a live investigation broadcast from Jordan Springs, so check Paranexus.org out a little bit later tonight and you'll get the link for that, and then they'll be talking about that on Informal Paranormal. John and Mike Jones will be doing that. And we thank Mike for screening our calls for us tonight. John is off. He is having a birthday, so we wish him a happy birthday. And we appreciate everybody in the chat room joining us at Hive and those who are joining us on the archive, and hope that you will come back. So until next week, have a great week, everybody.
Have a nice weekend.